If you go back and eat those foods, you know will never create the body you deserve. You know what it's doing? It's like reinforcing that path that was just starting to die out in your brain. You know what I mean? That pathway that was going to make that connection. If you don't use a pathway long enough, it'll overgrow and it'll die. It'll wear out. But if every time it starts to wear out, you go, well, I better go have some more of that chocolate, or, oh, yeah, I better go have some more of that food, or I better go overeat. The pathway never dies. It always stays alive, and you're always going to have to fight it. Just make a decision. Certain foods you're not going to eat. Just make a decision. Certain amounts of food you're not going to indulge in. And if you do that, and instead you do things that support you, you're going to find out you're in control at a whole new level. You're going to find out you have more joy than ever before. Now, how do you do this? That's where our urge crunchers come in. We're going to show you how to make that shift. But before we do, let's take a look at, can you create the urge to eat on cue? And can you change the urge on cue just by changing your mental focus? Let's try it for a second. I want you to close your eyes, unless you're driving, in which case that's not a good move. Keep your eyes open. You can imagine this with your eyes open if you're driving. But otherwise, close your eyes for a second. Take a deep breath in. And what I want you to do, it's exhale. I'll make sure you breathe out, okay? And what I want you to do is imagine having a wonderful brand new lemon you just picked from a tree. Make sure it's yellow and ripe. And take a good look at it and kind of smell a little of the outside texture in anticipation. Take out a knife. Cut it open. And what I want you to do is stick out your tongue. Now, come on. In your mind, imagine doing it. Stick out your tongue. Take that lemon. And I want you to squeeze it gently so it drops and juice drops out onto your tongue. And as it comes out on your tongue, that's it. Feel those sensations. Feel those feelings. Good. And then open your eyes. Now, my question is simple. Did you feel a change, first of all, in your state just by changing your mental focus? Did you anticipate? Did you feel, was there any more water in your mouth, any more saliva in your mouth than before we did it? If you experience anything like this, you've seen the impact of just changing your mental focus immediately on your taste buds, immediately on your physiology, immediately on how you would respond to something that isn't even there. Now, let's try something else. Imagine right now a food that normally you absolutely love. Let's say a pie, or let's say some kind of ice cream or something like that that you really normally would enjoy. Maybe grandma's apple pie. Well, my grandma doesn't make apple pie. Well, somebody's apple pie. Just imagine it. First, take a look at it, thinking about how you feel about it. I'll bring it a little closer and make it a bigger piece of pie. What the heck? And as it gets closer, what I want you to do now is smell what it smells like. And then take out your fork. And then slowly, gently, with incredible anticipation, take that first bite and feel each little morsel in your mouth and notice how that feels. Now, did you feel state change? There is no pie here. What are you doing? There's no pie in front of you. How come you feel this way? Because you're just changing your mental focus in your mind, and it can change how you feel. And by the way, maybe pie doesn't work for you. Maybe ice cream doesn't work for you. But there is something, I bet, that if you think about it, and you think about it enough, you're going to want it right now. Think of something right now that you really would want. Something that if you were to think about it right now, if I said to you, aren't you hungry? Aren't you hungry at least for this? You'd immediately go, yeah, I could have some of that. Think of what it is. And think about having some of it. And right now, get yourself in a state where you got to have some. What would you have to do in your head to get yourself, well, you got to have some? What would you have to picture? What would you have to say to yourself? How would you have to picture it? Bright, colorful clothes? What would you have to do? What would you have to anticipate? Notice how you do this. And as you're doing this now, stop for a second. And let's see if you can take the urge away just as quickly. What I want you to do now is, I want you to imagine your dog coming in and vomiting all over whatever it is you were just thinking about. Come on, I want you to picture it right now. Come on, have some fun with me. I want to just see if you can wipe it out. Imagine your dog coming up, and you're eating the food, and your dog's kind of, you know how sometimes the dog comes up and tries to get to your food, and you go, no, 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 and you kind of pat him. Imagine the dog comes up right at the edge, gets in your food, and goes, bleh, all over that food that you're just about to have. And then imagine putting your fork on it and bringing it up. Smell it. Imagine what it smells like. Imagine bringing it real close to your mouth, and imagine now, how many of you, do you really feel like you want to have it now? What happened to that urge? Kind of disappeared just a bit. Now, how'd you do that? Well, isn't that special? Yeah, you sure know how to do this. You know how to change it in a moment, don't you? Just by changing your mental focus. But you know what's been happening? You've been unconscious. You've been doing what everybody trained you to think about only one way. You can change how you're thinking about anything, and all of a sudden, you can make that hunger go away, can't you? Just by changing mental focus. Let's look at that third trigger for a second also. Physiology. that change in your physical body. You might say, well, Tony, wait a second. You're presupposing this. I just have this tremendous appetite, and I'm just hungry all the time. Yeah, but what makes you feel that way? Something in the outside world, something you're focusing on. Even the way you use your body changes how you feel. See, imagine you're out there playing Frisbee with your kids. You're tossing the Frisbee back and forth all over the place. Are you hungry in that moment? Probably not. Why? Because you're not focused on food. Because your body is active, because you're getting oxygen in there. A lot of times you're hungry because you're not breathing. You're not getting enough oxygen in your system. Your body's actually screaming for oxygen. You think it means food. Or your blood chemistry isn't balanced. You're not making demands on the system that causes you to utilize the fat or the sugar that's already in the system. So you think you need some more. But what happens? You're out there playing Frisbee like crazy, having all kinds of fun, bouncing around. And now the kids go off and you're sitting there on the steps. And you start to think, yeah, better eat something, Isn't that interesting? Same body, just a little change in your focus, just a little change. If you sit around, you tend to want to eat even more. And if you sit around in front of a TV set, you got hundreds of people constantly trying to stimulate you, constantly trying to give you some kind of external cue to eat their particular food. No wonder you're overeating. So what you got to do is get immersed. And when you feel the feeling in your body, do you think says, I got to eat? Ask yourself, is this a legitimate urge to eat? Is this based on reality? Or is this a counterfeit example of hunger? Yeah, I'm feeling it, but is it counterfeit? Is it made up of some limiting focus? Is it made up of some external cue? Is it made up of me just not using my body, so I'm trying to occupy the feelings of my body or change my emotions? Or is it something really real? Because here is our target and the purpose of this whole tape. This particular tape right now is basically on one thing. I want to make sure that whenever you eat, it's only because you have a legitimate physical cue. Your body's saying, hey, I need something. And then you eat some food that you enjoy in a legitimate amount, an appropriate amount that you know will nourish you and give you what you need to live your life. Your life isn't about food. You enjoy food, but it's not your entertainment. For most people, their life is boring and they go to eat food to try and change their mental or emotional state or entertain themselves or change something in their life. That will never give you what you want. That'll give you more pain in the long term. You know it. You feel lousy when the meal's over. You know it because you know what it's going to mean to you. And secondly, I want to get you highly sensitized. I want you to start interrupting these patterns and noticing what those cues are. What's triggering you? Is it mental? Is it external? Or is it physical? Is it a legitimate urge or not? And once you become sensitized to this, this one pattern change will change your life where nothing else will, because you can know what to do. You can know how you should do it, but you're not going to do it unless you break the pattern. And by the way, next time you're hungry, what if you decided, well, before I eat, I'm going to first interrupt my pattern. From now on, before I eat, what I got to do is 15 minutes of a little walking and maybe my 20 minutes at my heart rate and then 10 minutes or 15 minutes of warm down. I promise you, if you do that, you're going to eat differently. You need different amounts, different qualities, and you may not even eat it all at that time. So maybe before you eat, you got to exercise from now on. That'd be a pretty big difference. That'd be a pretty big pattern rep, wouldn't it? And you know what? It'll work. Because you know what I like about this? You can certainly avoid cues. And Dr. Nate's going to work with you on showing you ways to avoid certain cues that kind of get you hungry. And that's smart. And you can scramble it, which means change what it means. Or you can also take the approach that I call confront and conquer. That's the third approach. You confront those darn urges and you conquer them. You go into that place where you feel like every time you go by there, you got to have that certain donut or you got to have that certain kind of food. And you walk in there and you look around. You say, never again. You imagine the worst possible consequence from those foods. You imagine what it does to your system. You imagine never having the body you want. You imagine what your body looks like with your clothes off. Being honest with yourself, letting that stomach hang on out there. Looking at those legs, looking at that body and saying, this is the result of coming in this place and eating that food, doing it over and over again. Confronting and conquering could also be going into a restaurant where you feel like you're doing business all the time and you got to eat and saying, you know what? In this meeting, you make a deal with yourself. I'm not going to eat anything and I'm going to enjoy myself. That's my whole goal for going to this meeting, is to sit there, let them all eat their food, and I can drink, sip some water or some juice, or I can have a little salad or whatever it is I want to do, but I'm not here to eat. I can be in an environment where everybody else is eating, where all these cues, these external cues are happening, where all the things that would trigger me to focus on food are there, and I'm still in control. Let me tell you something. When you confront and conquer these cues, it'll totally change your belief in yourself, not only around eating, but anything else. Because when you feel like you're in control of your own environment, it totally changes your self-esteem. It changes how you think and how you feel, It gives you a sense of discipline. It gives you a sense of direction in your life, and it spills over into your business. It spills over into relationships. It spills into virtually every area of your life. What you're doing is establishing a new pattern, a pattern of success. So whether you're going to avoid the cues or whether you're going to scramble them or just confront and conquer them, whatever approach you take, just remember, you and you alone are in control. Nothing outside you does this to you. It's your ability to change those cues or to change out of that state of urgency that'll give you control of your life once and for all. This is what's going to be different than what you've done in the past. This is what's going to give you what you really want. Let me give you a final note before I turn you over to Dr. Booth, and that is this. Make sure you catch yourself doing things right. You're going to mess up at times. There's no question. But instead of beating yourself up, find out what you're doing right and reinforce it. Because a habit is nothing but a behavior that occurs repeatedly. And what's making it happen repeatedly is it's been reinforced. That is, at the moment you did that habit, you got pleasure for it, so that's why you do it again. And you've done that enough times that now you got this strong neuroassociation. How do you change it? You starve that old pattern. You don't reward it. You don't go into that pattern anymore and it'll disappear. I'll give you an example. If you got your dog Sparky here, and Sparky's learned because he's around Ivan Pavlov too much, and every time he hears a bell, he has saliva. So somebody comes to your front door, rings the bell, and there's that saliva all over your carpet. I can't even believe it. What am I going to do about Sparky here? Well, one thing you do with Sparky is you get Sparky where there are no bells long enough that eventually that pattern will dissipate. Now, that's one approach. The other way you can deal with Sparky is go out there and ring 1,000 bells every 5 minutes till his brain finally says, I'm exhausted. I can't salivate this much. In other words, he becomes desensitized. That's another approach. And years ago when I used to do therapy with people to help them turn around their diet, one approach I did with some people is I said, okay, I have an approach that's guaranteed to work, but you're going to have to come visit with me for 9 straight evenings. People are desperate enough to get in there. I said, what's your favorite food? And for 9 straight nights, I'd take them out and make them eat that same food in mass quantities till they couldn't stand anymore, and I forced them to do it for the full 9 days. First day, they thought, oh, this will never work, and this is really great. Second day, they were a little bit queasy about it. By about the fourth day, they were sick of it, and I pushed them for another 5 or 6. Guess what? Most of them wouldn't go through the whole 9 days. They had it with that food. They created a new set of feelings next to it. So that's another approach. Or some people, you know what they do? They say, oh, I got to discipline Sparky. I give Sparky a little pain. I'm going to get myself a nice big newspaper. The minute that doorbell rings and he salivates on my carpet, I'm going to give him something to salivate for. I'll show him. I'll teach him he can't do that. But you know what happens? Giving Sparky pain for doing what he does naturally usually, at the moment he does it, doesn't usually work for Sparky long term. In fact, you know what will happen very often? Poor old Spark here will get, you know what, smacked out of him. And what he'll do is he'll salivate on the carpet and then he'll run like crazy because he knows you're going to be coming to hit him. And you know what? I use this example to be somewhat humorous about what really happens with human beings. How often have you given yourself pain to try and change? And then when you're starting to make a little progress, you mess up in some way, you give yourself even more pain. I know some people, they want to change their habit and they want to stop smoking, for example. And what do? Stopping smoking, they didn't want to do because they knew it would be painful. They finally get themselves to stop smoking and then they think about having a cigarette. They don't even do it. And they get mad at themselves and they beat themselves up inside. So your brain learns, hey, if you don't smoke, you're going to get pain. If you do smoke, you get pain. They go, well, I might as well smoke because at least I got some pleasure too back then. People do the same thing with weight loss. Somebody says, man, not having this food is kind of painful, but then you mess up a little bit. Or maybe you don't mess up, you just think about it in a way that's not really great, and all of a sudden you start beating yourself up for having the desire for some of that food. When you start doing that, you know what happens? You slobber and run. Your own version of it, you know what it is? You eat and hide. You eat some food and then act like it really didn't happen, or you really didn't overeat, or you play some mental game with yourself. And you know you're playing a game with yourself. That's how binging happens. You go and you out overeat, and you know you're doing the wrong thing. You start to beat yourself up, and you say, well, what the heck, I'm here anyway, and you just keep on going. Have you ever done that? Or have you ever seen someone else do it? You don't want to get caught up in this pattern. What you don't want to do would be running around being a policeman punishing yourself. You're a great person. Not because you're listening to Nate and me, but because you're the kind of person that is truly seeking solutions. Somebody who's willing to do something and take action. Somebody who's committed to following through instead of just complaining about the fact that they got a problem. Think about it. Most people even get a program, don't even listen to it. So I want you to realize wherever you are, you've made progress. If nothing else, you've made progress in your awareness and your understanding. Now the next step is to make awareness in your consistent habits. And this tape's focus has been to help you to interrupt the pattern so you can begin to establish the new ones. How are you going to make sure you do that? We're going to give you some quick tools, and we're going to do them over the next 4 days. So as I promised you, this tape is organizing principles. From now on, we're going to go a lot quicker. I'm going to only give you like one little task, one little idea. I'm going to turn you over to Dr. Booth, and he's going to give you some tools to use immediately that day in the real world. So after the next 4 or 5 days, you're going to absolutely have control. You'll be able to create the urge if you want to, wipe out the urge on cue. You're going to be in charge, nobody else. Just the next 4 days alone, we're going to give you 20 urge crunchers, things that will wipe out the urge quickly. So I hope you found this to be valuable today. We spent a lot of time and some repetition to make sure we got this basic fundamental idea across. But by applying it, you can be free. Maybe for the very first time in your life, where now you're the one driving your life, not the environment. You're no longer like a stimulus response robot. You're a human being who has the choice to create their life exactly as they desire it and deserve it. Thanks for listening. Apply what we've talked about. I'm turning you now over to Dr. Booth. Until we meet again tomorrow for day number 7, remember to live with passion.
Thanks, Tony. When I graduated from high school, I weighed a measly 145 pounds. 10 years later, my weight was 172 pounds and climbing fairly rapidly. I'd always considered myself to be a healthy, athletic person, but I guess I just got busy doing other things, mainly going to college there. Slowly but surely, 27 pounds of fat magically leaked into my body. What's worse, I looked the other way and pretended it didn't matter that much. This is just another way of saying that I'd let my standards slip. My 2x4 over the head wake-up call came at 11 o'clock one night. The family had gone to bed, I was done with my work, and I was sitting there watching TV eating strawberry frosting out of the can. I looked at that pink, artery-clogging mush, looked at my fat gut, and said something to the effect of, "This isn't like me. I'm not an overweight, frosting-shoveling slob. I'm more than this." In that moment, I raised my standards. Then I changed a few key beliefs, changed my strategy, and lost the 20 pounds. From then until I was 40 years old, I fluctuated up and down, gaining 10 pounds in the winter and losing 10 pounds in the summer. I wasn't grossly overweight ever, but it was becoming more and more of a struggle every year. Then 5 years ago, I read Tony's book, Unlimited Power, and started following the same eating and exercise program that you're learning right now. My weight went right to the weight I wanted, and it stayed there ever since. The nifty part is that it's so easy. I eat as much as I want, feel great, and have more energy at 45 than I did when I was 25. The same thing can happen to you when you follow the eating and exercise plan that Tony laid out in days 4 and 5. Do it for 30 days and you'll never go back to your old ways. Tony just got done talking about the behavior chain. Today you'll learn the first place you can break that chain at the trigger link. Remember, your eating triggers are just like the bells that signaled Pavlov's dogs to salivate. So what you want to do is to tinker with your bells so that you don't even feel the urge to eat. There are 3 ways you can do this, and Tony's already talked about them, so let's review them briefly. Number 1 is to avoid as many of your eating cues as possible. Let's say it's 10 o'clock in the morning. It's break time. It would not be a great idea to head down to the old lunchroom, because what's in that lunchroom? Tons of external cues signaling you to eat. There's the machines around there, there's the food around there, there's the people around there, maybe there's cigarette smoke, there's just all sorts of cues signaling you to eat. So one effective strategy would be just to avoid that cue. Number 2 is to utilize what we call the scramble technique. We'll describe this in more detail a little bit later, but what you'll do is literally use your mental focus to scramble those images that used to produce that urge to eat unnecessarily. The 3rd way you can do it, Tony talked about this in very graphic detail, confront and conquer. So what we'll do is we'll come up with a list of all the situations where you used to overeat in the past, and one at a time take one of these 3 techniques to take care of that trigger. Let's examine how you can avoid those external cues at first. Remember, a cue is anything that signals you to eat. It's the most important eating cue is, of course, physiologically being hungry because you haven't eaten for 5, 6, 7 hours. This is a cue that you should listen to and follow with a reasonable amount of eating. But there are probably many cues in your life that have nothing to do with actually needing food. These cues make you feel hungry, but they're counterfeit cues. They put you on autopilot. Remember that counterfeit cues are so powerful because they've been paired with food so many times that now the cue alone makes you feel hungry. Your counterfeit cues are your bells. When other people walk into your mom's house, they're probably not hungry. When you walk into your mom's house, You're probably hungry because walking in that doorway and getting food have been paired so many times in the past. So avoiding your counterfeit cues is the first way you can break your eating behavior chain. Before you can do this, it's important to learn to correctly identify your counterfeit cues. Counterfeit cues fall into 7 groups. Group number 1 is the location cues. A particular chair, a movie theater like Tony talked about, the cafeteria at work, or the kitchen at home are common location cues. Number 2, activity cues. Playing cards, watching TV, reading, studying, and socializing are some common activity cues. Even stopping an activity can be a cue. What do you often do when you take a break from cleaning the house on Saturday afternoon? The third kind of cues are people cues. Certain people can be cues to eat. Do you have any eating buddies out there that every time you get together you go Dorito diving? Number 4, occasion cues. Birthdays, graduations, wedding, anniversaries, parties are all counterfeit cues for most people in our society. Number 5, sensory cues. Your senses can signal you to feel hungry even though you aren't physically hungry. You can see a candy display at the checkout stand, smell donuts as you walk by a shop's open door that just happened to be open there, hear the crackle of bacon, and of course, taste a bite of food. All these can be cues. Number 6 are time cues. Certain times of the day can be cues to eat. I remember for me it always used to be 3:30 in the afternoon, and how did that one get started? By coming home every day from school at 3:30 and walking in Mom's door. And the 7th kind of cues are your mood cues. Do you eat in response to anger, sadness, depression, happiness, tension? All of these can be very potent cues to eat. It's especially deafening when there are many bells ringing at once. It's 5:20 p.m. You've just walked into the house after work. You're tense. The kids are there. You walk into the kitchen. You see those cream-filled cookies, and you gobble them down so fast you don't even taste them. Now, here's what we'd like you to do to get a handle on this. In the blanks in the Day 6 section of your workbook, write down as many of the situations as you can think of that are extremely strong triggers for you to eat. Stop your tape now, go to the workbook, and complete this section. Welcome back. Now what we'd like you to do is to take a look at this list of situations, and off to the right side of the situation, write down that if you can fairly easily avoid that trigger at least some of the time. Do this right now. Remember that an eating cue for one person may not be an eating cue for another person. When some people get depressed, they feel hungry and eat. When other people get depressed, they don't even feel hungry. But there is a certain group of cues that are bells for the vast majority of people. That's why the following general cue management skills will help you remove that little hammer from some of your bells. Here they are. Number 1, choose a specific place at home and work to do all your eating. At home, it's best to make your eating place at the dinner table, of course. Eat only at this place. At work, it's best to choose any place other than your workstation. Number 2, when you're eating, only eat. Don't eat and read, eat and watch TV, eat and work, or eat and defuse a nuclear weapon. Make eating a pure behavior with no counterfeit cues hanging around. Number 3, replace high-calorie convenience foods with low-calorie, more healthful foods. If cupcakes and candy bars are available in your cupboards, you'll probably eat cupcakes and candy bars. If apples and carrots are available, you'll probably eat apples and carrots. And here's number 4. Keep food in the kitchen, preferably stored away in cabinets or the refrigerator. The sight of food may be a cue for you if you're like most of the population. I don't know if your grandma's house was like my grandma's house, but she had food displayed all over the place. In jars, candy dishes, everywhere you could imagine there was food. Tons of bells signaling us to eat, which we did on a fairly regular basis. Number 5, ask for food. In most cases, don't accept food from someone unless you ask for it. When you eat at restaurants, anticipate challenges and ask your server to leave the snacks, breads, and unwanted foods in the kitchen. Here's number 6, leave food on your plate sometimes. Most of us have been brainwashed since childhood to eat everything on our plates. Unbrainwash yourself by purposely leaving a little bit on your plate at some meals. Remember to eat slowly until you're comfortable, and then stop. Here's number 7. When you prepare food for yourself or others, put the unused food away before you begin to eat. This is the old peanut butter and crackers trick. Get those things put away before you start eating, or I can almost guarantee you, you're going to make some more. Number 8, manage your queues at the supermarket. Use a list and don't buy anything not on the list. Go shopping with a comfortable stomach. Avoid the aisles, and you know the ones I'm talking about, with those high-calorie munchies. And as you shop, make sure you look at the labels. Look at the back of those boxes to determine how much fat is in those foods you're eating. You'll probably be surprised. And finally, only shop once or twice a week. Don't stop at the store every night on the way home from work. Let's move on to technique number 2, is the scramble technique. With the scramble technique, you use all your senses to form new negative neural associations. You want to use sight, sound, feeling, taste, and smell. Let's have an example of this. Let's say that you love candy bars. You love chocolate candy bars. How can you utilize all 5 of your senses to form potent negative associations to that candy bar? Here's how you can do it. Use sight first. Look down at the candy bar, and as you look down there, I want you to see something that you find disgusting. The more disgusting, the better. I don't care if this is vomit. You could also look down at the candy bar and notice that the nuts that are usually in the candy bar are now pieces of dead cockroaches. I don't care what it is, mold, slime, maggots, whatever you find particularly disgusting, put that on the candy bar. Now let's do sounds. What kind of sounds? Now, I know a candy bar doesn't usually make sounds, but what would happen if you took a bite of that candy bar and you thought there were nuts in there and you cracked down on those dead cockroaches? What kind of sound would dead cockroaches make if you bit down on them? Now, how about feeling? How would that feel in your mouth if you chewed that up? How would the vomit feel? How would the dead cockroaches feel? Notice how it feels to crunch down on those and feel them in your mouth. Swallow it now and feel it going down your throat. How about taste? How would the vomit taste? How would the maggots taste? How would the dead cockroaches taste? Thoroughly weld these negative associations to the candy bar. How about smell? How would the vomit smell as you pulled that candy bar up to your nose and you looked at the vomit? How would the vomit smell? How would the dead cockroaches smell? How about those maggots going in and out of that chocolate bar? How would they smell? So if all 5 of your senses, sight, sound, feeling, taste, and smell, put as many negative associations on the chocolate bar as you can. So in review, run the scene through in your mind. You see the candy bar. You smell it. You touch it. You put it in your mouth. Run that scene through with all your 5 senses right to the end of the scene. Then when you get to the end of that scene in your imagination, what we're going to want you to do is to rewind that scene as fast as you can. It's almost like you pushed a hyperspeed rewind button on your VCR. Rewind it as fast as you can, zip, right back to the beginning. Then apply more negative associations to that same scene. Run the same scene through again. And this time, instead of using the vomit, you can use the maggots. Do this over and over again, applying those negative associations when you go forward through the scene, then rewind it as quickly as you can, then run through it again with the negative associations and rewind it as fast as you can. Do this 5 or 6 times so you scramble those associations. You put new negative associations on the candy bar, whatever the food is, where there used to be positive associations. Now, after I've done this little example technique, think of a candy bar right now. How do you feel? Do you crave a candy bar right now? I doubt if you do because of those new negative associations in your mind. Now, with the scramble technique, you'll pick out your foods, the ones that you really crave. Or you could pick out a specific situation where you typically overeat, and you can scramble that just as we explained with the candy bar. Let's move on to technique number 3 now, confront and conquer. Confront and conquer is basically the same as the scramble technique, except with confront and conquer, you actually put yourself in the situation. You would actually have a candy bar right there. You wouldn't do it in your imagination. You would have a candy bar there. Or Tony gave a couple of examples. One was when he was in the donut section of the supermarket. Remember what he did there? Remember the pictures and feelings and sounds that he got in his mind? The other example he gave was when he was in that greasy fast food restaurant. So what we want you to do is to use all your senses, see, hear, feel, taste, and smell, all these negative associations while you're in the situation. Now, let's apply this information to your life. In your workbook, in the Day 6 section, Write down all the situations and foods that are currently a challenge for you. Then, off to the right of each situation or food, check the blank if you're going to avoid it. Just put a check mark in the avoid column. Put a check mark in the scramble column if you're going to use the scramble technique. And or put a check mark in the confront and conquer column if you're going to confront or conquer that particular situation or food. Do this right now. You've now learned three ways that you can confront those triggers. You've learned that you can avoid some of them. You've learned that you can scramble all of them. You've also learned that you can confront and conquer any of those situations that used to be challenges for you. As you can imagine, it's difficult to wipe out all those triggers that signal those counterfeit urges to eat. That's why the urge crunchers you'll learn on the next couple tapes are so important. When you use them, you can reduce your counterfeit urges in strength or make them go away completely. When this happens, you don't eat. This breaks the pairing of the bell and eating, and the bell loses some of its volume. When done enough, the bell stops ringing altogether. This is why it gets easier as time goes by. You break up the associations that put you on autopilot. That I'm hungry circuit in your brain washes away as you form the new habit, a habit that will lead to the outcome you desire. I don't know if you're like me, but I have a tendency to eat very quickly. It's awfully easy to underenjoy and overeat when you do eat quickly. You bypass your taste buds and short-circuit your body's feedback mechanisms, which tell you to stop eating when you've had enough. In most situations, you'll eat less food when you slow down. Here's how to do it. Number one, purposefully spend 20 to 30 minutes eating. Don't snarf everything down in 5 or 6 minutes and head out the door. Number two, stay relaxed while you eat. Take a nice deep breath every once in a while. Number three, cut your food into smaller pieces. Number four, stop and think about what and how much you're eating. Number five, chew your food slowly. Number six, swallow each bite before taking the next mouthful. Don't be a two-fisted eater. Number seven, put less food on your utensils. We want you to exercise, but doing a 5-pound forklift during your evening meals is not exactly what we had in mind there. Let's move on to number eight. Put your utensils and finger foods down in between the bites. Number nine, have a 1 or 2 minute pause in the middle of your meal. Actually talk to the people that you're with at the time. What a concept. Number 10, assess your degree of fullness periodically and stop when you're comfortable. Let's say on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being extremely hungry and 10 being stuffed, and 5 or 6 just being comfortable, it's very important to eat when you're a 1 or a 2 and stop when you're a 5 or 6. It's not necessary to stuff yourself with food. Number 11, be the last person to be finished when you eat. And finally today, we'd like you to complete your eating diary and your eating and exercise log as you have been doing. Then read the day 6 section in your workbook and go to the practical application part of the day and complete all the exercises. And finally tomorrow, reserve some time to listen to your audio tapes, read your workbook, and go to your video and begin viewing right where you left off. This will be the first section of your daily mental aerobics. One of my favorite authors, Richard Bach, wrote, "You're never given a wish without also being given the power to make it come true." You have been given the power to create the body you deserve and the life you desire. I challenge you to use that power in the next 24 hours. Keep the momentum going, and we'll see you tomorrow.